Today, when markets confuse as things fall apart. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one that is post covering finance and property news. This is our weekly market update where we start in the US, cross to Europe and Asia and in Australia and cover commodities and crypto along the way. This past week saw significant gyrations in the market as trade tensions with China, US company results, rising debt risk, more AI investments and crypto mayhem all messed with the indices. That said, robust earnings from major US banks offered some signs of economic resilience at a time when official macroeconomic reports remain delayed due to the ongoing government shutdown, and when most talking heads are still jawboning the markets higher. The MSCI Global Index rose 1.2% this past week, though it dipped slightly on Friday, and the European Stoxx 600 dropped 0.95% on Friday, but was still up 0.37% across the week. The S&P 500 was 0.5% higher in New York, and the VIX, or the volatility metric, fell 4.53 to 20.76 after opening above 28 and peaking at 28.99. For the week, the S&P 500 gained 1.7%, the Nasdaq rose 2.1%, and the Dow climbed 1.6%. Bitcoin tumbled below $104,000 at one point, but recovered to around 107,000. Gold futures dropped 1.7% and silver sank 6%, both precious metals having repeatedly reached record highs this month. Under the hood, though, more questions are being asked about the risks in the current bubbly markets. And Jamie Dimon's cockroach comment went viral this week as several regional banks posted larger than expected loan loss reserves, actually the highest in 3 years. This spooked the market and reignited fears of more credit-related cockroaches lurking in the banking sector. Despite the lack of good data thanks to the US shutdown, evidence does suggest that some consumers continue to struggle and the labour market is weakening, despite Jerome Powell's comments during the week that both demand for labour and supply of labour were weakening together, suggesting the unemployment rate might hold around current levels. Data show that the Philadelphia Fed Business Index for October declined 12.8 points compared with a rise of 8.5 estimated by economists. And Fed Governor Christopher Wallace said he supported an additional interest rate cut in October due to mixed readings on the state of the job market. The US National Federation of Independent Businesses said this week that optimism indexes, a gauge of sentiment around small firms, fell by 2 points in September to 98.8. Economists were expecting small business sentiment to hold steady above 100, so the decline in sentiment was a bit of a surprise. 10-year Treasury yields slipped to 4.03%, having dipped briefly below 4%, and the 2-year is now under 3.5%. When market yields meander lower, this may signal further Fed rate cuts. The timing is, of course, the question. And while the federal government shutdown is expected to impede consumer confidence a bit, the government tends to impede productivity, so possibly the shutdown may not be that significant to GDP. On Friday, the S&P 500 recovered from a rough start when volatility spiked higher and closed higher after President Donald Trump toned down his aggressive tariff threats against China. It actually gathered momentum in the afternoon trading when Trump told reporters at the White House that the US is doing well in negotiations with China, adding that it looks like the meeting with President Xi Jinping later this month in South Korea is going forward. Elsewhere, Trump said his proposed 100% tariff on goods from China would not be sustainable. I think we're going to be fine with China, but we have to have a fair deal. It's got to be fair. White House economic advisor Kevin Hassett said the US is not in a trade war with China, and while the US is disappointed with some of China's actions, he also said the US is confident we can get back to a place that is good for both countries. Solid results from several regional US banks helped to calm worries about a potential credit crisis. Truist Financial gained 3.7% after the bank reported higher third quarter profits. Fifth Third Bancorp rose 1.3%. Zions shares rebounded from the 13% loss the day before, after the regional bank then disclosed an unexpected loss on two loans in its California division, adding to growing investor unease about hidden credit stresses as lenders navigate economic uncertainty with interest rates still relatively high. Cue The Economist's front cover. It closed 5.8% higher, and Western Alliance advanced 3.1%. The US regional bank ETF was at 48.43, having recovered a little on Friday. Investors overall appear to be keen to buy into the rally. Bank of America data showed equity funds lured $28.1 billion in, while cash shed $24.6 billion for the week ended October the 15th. In a note, Goldman Sachs reiterated its positive views of US equities. While risks are still plentiful, we expect policy uncertainty will continue to fall and CEO confidence will continue to improve in 2026. We expect continued strength in AI hyperscaler CapEx growth in 2026, with constrained buyback growth one consequence of that investment spending. Consensus expects the hyperscalers will grow CapEx by 20% in 2026 versus roughly 6% in 2025, but we believe CapEx growth will surprise to the upside. Elsewhere, Robert Pelvic, a senior portfolio manager at Dakota Wealth, said the market doesn't really know what to make when Donald Trump speaks. There's just a lot of back and forth comments with regards to China and trade tariffs and, well, pretty much everything else. Robust earnings from JP Morgan and other big banks this week did help to get the third quarter earnings season off to an upbeat start. Analysts, on average, see S&P 500 earnings climbing 9.3% in the third quarter. That's an improvement from expectations of 8.8% at the start of October. Following a rally of nearly 14% in 25, the S&P 500 is valued at 23 times expected earnings. That's the priciest level in 5 years. Wall Street's most valuable companies were mixed, with Tesla rising 2.5%, Apple adding almost 2%, and Amazon falling 0.7%. Eli Lilly fell 2% after Trump said he would bring down prices of weight loss drugs. And State Street dropped 1.4% after the bank's third quarter net interest income missed estimates. Elsewhere, Oracle provided the latest glimpse into the state of the artificial intelligence euphoria, unveiling a soaring long-term financial outlook that the software group said was being powered by sky-high demand that is really hard to comprehend. And railroad operator CSX Corporation posted a steep slide in third quarter profits compared to a year ago, but when discounting one-time impairment charges of $164 million, income would have stood at $818 million, which was just above Wall Street forecasts. Micron Technology plans to stop supplying server chips to data centers in China after the business was slapped with a government ban in 2023, according to reports on Friday. And TSMC, the world's largest manufacturer of advanced semiconductors, gave a bullish outlook for spending on AI on Thursday. Optimism about AI and expectations for interest rate cuts have lifted Wall Street to record highs this year. The S&P 500 has gained 12% so far in 2025. But as I discussed yesterday, the question of whether the AI bubble is really real or not is now right at the center of thinking. The US dollar hit a fresh weekly loss against the Swiss franc and yen on Friday amid concerns about trade tensions and unease among some regional American banks. The US dollar fell to its weakest level against the Swiss franc in a month, while the yen eased earlier gains following Bank of Japan's governor Kazuhiro Ide's discussion of factors that could lead to a rate increase this month. The dollar fell 0.8% to 0.07936 against the Swiss franc, dropping to its lowest level since the middle of September, and that's the biggest weekly loss since June. The euro was down 0.17% to 1.1654, the biggest weekly gain against the dollar in 9 weeks. The dollar index, which tracks the US currency against six of its counterparts, slid 0.55% this week, although it was up 0.1% on the day to 98.54, and sterling slips a little to 1.3426, but still for a weekly gain. Gold's mighty cyclical bull just grew into its biggest ever although actually in context, it's nothing really major. It's a matter of getting the right perspective. Sure, midweek gold's massive bull over its past couple of years eclipsed its famous popular speculative mania in June 1980, and gold's relentless upside momentum is bullishly attracting in legions of new speculators and investors, yet gold's powerful surge has also left it exceedingly overbought. Actually, there are two kinds of bull markets, long secular and shorter cyclical ones. And in fact, the broader cyclical bulls are comprised of a series of smaller cyclical bulls and bears. Plenty of analysts consider the entire 1970s one huge secular bull. Gold skyrocketed 2,155% over 9 years into January 1980. But smack in the middle of that, from December 1974 to August 1976, gold cratered a horrendous 47.4% in 1.7 years. Now, that wasn't really very bull-like, was it? So perhaps the 1970s really had two separate secular bulls, a 419% one over 4 years into December 1974, and then a second 732% monster over another 3.4 years, cresting in that same January 1980. But on the other hand, smaller cyclical bulls are harder defined and therefore not disputable. When gold rallies more than 20% on a closing basis, that is formally classed as a cyclical bull. Cyclical bulls persist until gold falls 10% on a closing basis from its bull high. Through the entire 1970s decade, gold enjoyed nine separate cyclical bulls averaging 80.1% gains over 7.8 months each. So those retail investors queuing in Sydney to buy gold or silver should beware, as FOMO is rife now and corrections may well come. With silver futures down 5.99% on Friday to $50.10, perhaps an early indicator. Oil prices edged higher in the European session on Friday after falling earlier in the day, following news that US President Donald Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin agreed to meet and discuss ending the Ukraine war within the next 2 weeks. Brent futures rose 0.2% to $61.34 a barrel, and US West Texas Intermediate crude futures gained 0.1% to $57.64 a barrel. Both contracts were down around 2% over the week. Crude prices have been battered by concerns over sluggish demand and the looming supply glut, while a build in US inventories also weighed. Now, European stocks fell sharply on Friday, tracking overnight losses on Wall Street on Thursday, following concerns over the health of US regional banks and ahead of the release of key inflation data. The DAX index in Germany dropped 1.8%, the CAC 40 in France slipped 0.2%, and the FTSE in London fell 0.9%. In corporate news, Pearson's reported third quarter sales growth of just 4%, taking growth for the first 9 months of the year to 2%. The education company flagged strong growth ahead in the fourth quarter, citing favourable unit dynamics and continued traction of its digital offerings. Swedish trackmaker Volvo reported a third-quarter operating profit in line with market expectations, even as weaker demand in North and South America weighed on the results. And luxury company Hermès confirmed that the artistic director of the menswear styles is departing after 37 years in the brand, while it was reported that Porsche's supervisory board has agreed on a successor for the CEO at the auto giant. Consumer price inflation rose 2.2% in the Eurozone on an annual basis in September, according to data released on Friday. And the European Bank doesn't therefore get much excuse for further easing of monetary policy. The Eurozone's consumer price index rose by 2.2% annually last month, up from 2% in September, confirming the flash release seen earlier in the month. Month on month, the reading gained 0.1% last month, after posting a similar gain of 0.1% in August. Stripping out more volatile items like food and fuel, the core number rose to 2.4% in the 12 months of September, increasing from 2.3% in the prior month. The ECB has cut interest rates by 2 percentage points in the year to June, but has been on hold ever since, arguing that inflation was now roughly at target, and there was no urgency in adjusting rates further. It is widely expected to keep rates unchanged at its next meeting at the end of the month. The French Prime Minister survived two no-confidence votes on Thursday, reducing the likelihood of an early election, but this has come at a severe political cost to President Emmanuel Macron's government, as he's been forced to shelve the only major economic reform of his second term. His concession, delaying the reform until after the 2027 presidential election, was made as a last-ditch attempt to prevent the collapse of the current weak minority government. The move will have long-term consequences, with orders as saying the delay will result in about 13 billion euros worth of an annual hole in the public finances by 2035, if it's not undone by 2027. Data show that the UK economy grew 0.1% month on month in August, after falling 0.1% in July, which could offer some relief to Chancellor Rachel Reeves as she prepares for a budget in November. According to the International Monetary Fund, the UK economy is on track to have the second fastest growth amongst G7 nations in 2025 after the US, but that 1.3% growth is not enough to avoid the need for tax increases in the November budget. Recent PMI data also suggested that after a strong summer, confidence and momentum faded in September due to concerns over the potential budget implications. The economy's regaining momentum hinges on restoring business confidence and reducing uncertainty. The data followed earlier figures that showed unemployment at its highest level in over 4 years, rising to 4.8%. Most Asian stock markets fell sharply on Friday, tracking overnight losses on Wall Street, where renewed fears over US regional banks rattled investor confidence, while Chinese shares led regional declines amid the escalating trade tensions with Washington. Japan's Nikkei 225 dropped 1.3% on Friday, after sharp gains in the last two sessions, for a 1% weekly loss. Broader topics eased 1% on the day. Chinese shares fell the most in the region as trade tensions between Beijing and Washington remained heightened. China's blue chip Shanghai shares in the CSI 300 dropped 1.3% on Friday, while the Shanghai Composite Index fell 1%. Hong Kong's Hang Seng Index slumped 1.8%, a loss of about 3% across the week. South Korea's KOSPI briefly bucked the regional trend, rising as much as 1.2% to a fresh record high of 3,794.87 points early in the session, but the index later gave up gains as the broader caution weighed. South Korea's chief presidential policy advisor said on Thursday that he was optimistic about talks to finalize a trade agreement with the US, and the US Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent also confirmed negotiations during a CNBC interview, saying, "We are about to finish up with Korea. Seoul and Washington are reportedly working to ease disputes over tariffs and supply chain cooperation, particularly in the semiconductor and electric vehicle sectors." India's Nifty 50 traded largely flat, dragged by losses in major IT firms, including Infosys and Wipro, after their second quarter earnings raised margin concerns. The Australian share market slipped on Friday as investors pushed gold to a fresh record high amid concerns about systemic stress in credit markets and tariff frictions between the US and China. The benchmark ASX 200 lost 0.8% to 8,995.3. That's well away from the record high above 9,100 set just the previous session. Even so, the index posted a 0.4% gain for the week, and the All Ords shed 0.9% on Friday. Eight of the 11 sectors were in the red, led by energy and tech stocks. Family tracking app Life360 fell 8% to $45.54. That's the biggest one-day drop since early April. There was again a lot of action in commodities. Gold miners rose as the precious metal climbed to historical peaks of around $4,378. Newmont rallied 2.9% to $149.96, and Northern Star advanced 2.3% to $26.05. Copper, lithium and rare earth companies, however, slumped ahead of Prime Minister Anthony Albanese's first face-to-face meeting with the US President at the White House on Monday to discuss critical minerals. The Labour government is hoping Australia's supply of critical minerals could be used as leverage to convince the US to eventually drop the tariffs that it's imposed on its close ally. But there's a lot of scepticism among the producers around the Australian government's plan, said Michael McCarthy, a market strategist at the online trading platform Moomoo. The move on the ASX is reflecting the change in thinking about the idea that the government could stockpile critical minerals might help in terms of negotiation with the US government, he said. Lynas Rare Earth dropped 5.7% to $19.24. Paladin Energy lost 6.8% to $9.20. Iluka fell 2.4% to $8.10 after pulling its sales forecast due to uncertainties relating to a key customer. The big miners were split after a choppy session. While BHP ended 0.4% lower at $42.60, Rio Tinto rebounded to close 1.3% higher at $130.88. Woodside and Santos dropped more than 2% each, though. Elsewhere on the ASX, the financial sector flashed red, led by QBE, down 9.3% to $19.52. And the big banks also fell, led by National Australia Bank and Westpac, who were both down 0.8%. Bond traders have sharpened bets that the Reserve Bank will cut interest rates soon following the unexpected spike in the unemployment rate. Money markets imply an 80% chance the central bank will lower the cash rate to 3.35% on Melbourne Cup Day. Probability was just 40% earlier in the week. Markets are fully priced for an easing in December and a follow-up move in May next year. The repricing is weighing on the Australian dollar, which eased to 64.7 US cents from 64.95 earlier. On the week, however, it was largely unchanged, but in the last month, the currency has climbed above 67 US and has dropped to 64.12. And looking at the UK, it was last at 48.36 UK pence. In crypto, Bitcoin dipped on Friday, and that reached a second straight week of losses, as risk appetite for cryptocurrencies was battered by concerns over US-China trade tensions and potential credit risks. Crypto markets tracked declines in broader risk-driven assets, of course, with Wall Street and global stock markets retreating on rising economic uncertainty. An ongoing US government shutdown weighed on sentiment, especially with a delay of several key economic readings. Bitcoin fell more than 8% over the week after clocking a 10% drop the prior week. It was last at $107,020. Bitcoin struggled to advance after a flash crash wiped out nearly half a trillion dollars of crypto market cap last week, dragging the world's biggest crypto as low as $103,000 US at one point. The crash stemmed from heightened US-China trade tensions and also saw a record high $16 billion liquidation of long positions. While the coin did recoup some losses this week, especially on the back of dovish signals from the Federal Reserve, it and broader crypto markets remained squarely on the back foot. Bitcoin also traded well below early October record highs of over 126,000 US. Risk aversion increased this week amid growing concerns over credit risk in regional US banks. Said concerns sparked deep losses in US bank stocks, as I reported, and spilled over into the broader markets. XRP issuer Ripple Labs is leading efforts to raise $1 billion in funding to build a stockpile of the token, according to Bloomberg. While more buy actions bode well for XRP, the token showed little positive reaction to the report, falling 3.7% to 2.3385. The token also remained close to an 11-month low, hit during last week's flash crash. Bloomberg reported the money will be raised through a special purpose acquisition vehicle, while Ripple will also contribute some of its own XRP to the stockpile. XRP was trading down nearly 2% across the week after a 19.8% slump last week, and it was last at 2.3599. Last week's sharp crypto sell-off was mainly driven by crypto-native traders rather than traditional investors using regulated products. That's according to JP Morgan analysis. In a note, the bank said that there was little evidence of meaningful liquidation activity in spot Bitcoin ETFs, which tend to be used by mainstream retail investors. Between October the 10th and October the 14th, Bitcoin ETFs saw just $220 million of outflows, or 0.14% of assets under management, while Ethereum ETFs recorded $370 million withdrawals, or 1.23% of assets under management. CME Bitcoin futures, a key barometer of institutional sentiment, showed limited stress, while CME Ethereum futures saw more pronounced deleveraging, which they said attributes to greater de-risking by momentum-driven players such as commodity trading advisors and quant funds. The bulk of the damage instead came in perpetual futures, a venue heavily used by crypto-native participants. Open interest in Bitcoin and Ethereum perpetual contracts dropped by around 40% in dollar terms, a much steeper fall than the underlying price moves. According to JP Morgan, that pattern points to crypto-native investors as the main force behind the correction, with non-crypto-native investors, typically active in CME futures or ETFs, largely staying out of the sell-off. Now, we're going to try to decode some of this latest crypto action with Adam Stokes on my live show next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Sydney, so join us for that. But standing back, the contention between high stock valuations, mainly thanks to the US AI trade, high commodity prices versus trade risks and bubble risks remain as ever, as FOMO is building among retail investors too. Just remember that tech stocks in the US are supporting the markets much more than across other regions, which helps to explain strong inward fund flows there. Yet banks are still sitting on significant unrealized losses, and the greed and fear index is at 24, which signals extreme fear. And the US money supply, well, is expanding again. All of this suggests that we are not out of the woods yet, and the next few weeks will continue to be extremely troublesome, complex, and there are significant risks to the downside. Whilst, of course, the talking heads will continue to talk the market up, trying to get more retail investors into FOMO land. We are at an interesting point. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.